Ladies, so good to see you all. I've missed you. I feel like I haven't been around for 3 weeks, so that's why. Anyway, really excited this morning. We're going to do a Mentor Mom panel, so woo! Give it up. So we have questions.
Find out how little we know.
Yeah. Not much to look forward to, no. We have a bunch of questions that you guys had asked, and then I think we might have thrown in a couple of extras that we thought would be good to have a conversation about. We're going to kind of run it. Everybody's got a question that they're going to answer, and then we'll kind of open it up. Like, if we answer it and kind of say, hey, does somebody have anything else they want to add to that? Because you guys are living in it, and you might have experience and something that you want to share that would be valuable. It's not just us, so you guys are doing it too. So, is there a mentor mom who doesn't have a good relationship with her in-laws, and how did you deal with it? So I'm the opposite of that. I actually have a beautiful relationship with both of my mother-in-laws because I was married for 10 years to my high school sweetheart, got divorced and been married 30 years. And for me, both of those ladies are very special in my life. I still actually have not been married to my ex-husband for 30 years, and I just last summer went up to go see my son and stopped and saw her and spent the night with her with my mom. And she calls me. We have a very, very good relationship. But I think I've also seen, you know, children who have been married and have relationships that aren't good. So I have seen some of that. And I think it's hard because how many of you have boys? Raise your hand if you have boys. Okay, here's the real ugly truth, right? How many of you spend more time with your moms than your husband's parents, with your family, as opposed to your husband's family? Who spends more time with the female's parents? Just kind of a natural thing, unless your families live far, that you're kind of spending more time, generally speaking, with the mom, your parents. But I think it's really important, and I think we forget that those moms just, they love their boys, and some people are unhealthy, right? So you have to have boundaries with unhealthy people. Some people are not necessarily unhealthy, but they just feel left out. And I think we don't think about that, that a mother-in-law is feeling left out. But I think inadvertently we do that, not on purpose, just dynamically. And so I think when you have a hard relationship with somebody, the first thing I would say to you is you've got to be praying for that person. So much of, daily, you need to be praying for that person. Because what I know that God does is he changes your heart when you're praying for somebody, and he does something in you and makes you more open. So logistically, practically, what does that look like? I don't know. I'll just throw out a question. Somebody can be brave and answer it. What would your mother-in-law do if you asked her out to lunch, just the two of you? Would you even do that? Right? I mean, who wants to, does anybody, it can feel awkward and weird, but you want to develop, they're also the grandparents of your kids. The good situation, they're babysitting your kids. You want them to honor you and what you want your kids, how you want your kids treated and talked to and behaved when they're not in your presence with them. And I think it's about relationship. I think you have to make an effort to the best of your capacity to have a relationship with your mother-in-law. And when it's hard, you have boundaries with that, right? Doesn't mean you lay over in your doormat and she can do whatever she wants. You have to have boundaries and you have to be on the same page with your husband. So if you have a mother-in-law that is manipulative or speaks poorly of you, that's kind of your husband's thing to kind of be your guy, because you guys are his immediate family now. That's still his mom, he loves her, but that would be something that you and your husband should have conversation about. And I would say that anytime you're going to talk about her, if you have a hard time with her, you or him, I think it's mostly moms, but you just got to be praying about it constantly. And God does do a work, and he does change hearts. For me, I had such a great relationship with my mother-in-laws because I accepted them for who they were and what they had to offer and didn't I mean, I had like things I wanted them to do, but I also let them just kind of be who they were with that. And I know I just cultivated a relationship with them and also didn't take things personally that I think a lot of people can take personally. So for example, my mother-in-law, current mother-in-law who just passed away a couple years ago, is bipolar. And so she didn't talk a lot in the beginning, but her way of showing me love was she watched our kids every Tuesday while I went to like this little mommy and me preschool job that I worked. And I'd come home and things would be ironed and cleaned and food would be made and vacuum. I mean, she would just like clean the house. But I could have taken that two ways, right? She doesn't think I'm good enough. She doesn't think I'm doing a good job taking care of my house. But I chose to be like, she's just showing me love because I really didn't feel malice in it. And so everybody, you have to just juxtapose your mindset and not assume that you know why they're doing things. Because we assume a lot of things about why moms are doing things. Does anybody have a question? I don't know if that was helpful or not helpful. Anything?
I will chime in quickly on the in-law thing. I had to set a boundary at the beginning of my marriage because my mother-in-law would call my husband every day and go through the day with him. And we had to say, no, like, I'm your person now. You have to talk to me about all these things and you can do that once a week. I don't know. It was a lot at the beginning. Now we have different issues because we have extremely different worldviews, and that's a challenge. But like she said, just keep praying and just being the example, and it's your family. Like, you have to kind of lay down the rules.
Oh, I can't start with that one.
they gave me the sex question. Okay, we'll start with it. How do you find time for sex and keep it interesting? This is great. I'm just going to speak from personal experience. I know everybody is very different, and you do you. I think you have to just do it. Sometimes you don't want to do it. Sometimes it's a one-sided event, and that's okay. Sometimes that's just the way it is. I would say morning, afternoon, by the bedtime, you don't want anything to do with it, so don't even bother. Afternoon delight. Interesting. Corey gave me the idea of having getaways, weekend getaways. Corey showed me how. No, I'm just saying, like, having a night away or just something in a different environment helps. Any other questions? We can talk about this privately on the side. I don't know. I don't know how far we go into that one.
Any questions?
You all figured it out at least one time.
There you go.
Know which one to do. I used to make aprons. I had a little business.
You have to tell them what the question is.
This isn't a question. I want to add on to your thing about sex.
Oh.
And they were really cute aprons. They looked like little dresses. And I had a guy who bought them one time and said, I'm going to give this to my wife and ask her just to wear this and nothing else. So keep that in mind if you have an apron. I have some if you want one. Sorry, I just came to my mind. Okay. I'm just trying to figure out which one to do first. Maybe the one about how did you find time to feel like yourself separate from being a mom? What a question. I'm not sure you can. Once that baby's born, you become a different person. It's really hard to go back to single life and what it felt like. I never did that, but I did take self-care very seriously when I was in that stage. When I had my first one, we had just moved to this new house. My family wasn't with me. I didn't have a church. I didn't know the neighbors, didn't know anybody. And I had me, the baby, and four walls, and it was really hard. But one thing I found to do that I could do that was available to me, because I couldn't drive with this baby yet. I wasn't ready for that. So I put him in the stroller and we would walk and walk and walk and walk. And that kind of lifted me out of my doldrums. I know this goes along with where you are now, but it was really hard for me to think about some of the things that I did as a single I would not want to do now. So you have to take that into consideration. We're a different person when that baby's born. You become a different person. And even if you go do something that's away from the baby, what's your first thought? What's he doing? Is he sleeping? How is he? Does he need me? You know, it's just built into us. And we'll never get separated from it. I can speak as a longtime mom. You're always going to be mom, no matter how old they get. And it just goes with the territory. So I think just accepting who you are right now, that I can't go back. I don't want to go back. I want to do what you guys are doing. I want to learn how to be better at what I do. And that will lift you because you've always got another adventure ahead. Look at it as an adventure. You know, what can we do today that's going to make this a fun day with my children rather than a hassle? If we get up with that kind of positive attitude, it really goes a long way towards helping us dive into the day. One other thing that I did, I worked for 5 years before we had children, and I wasn't ready for children when we got married, and so we decided to wait. We were traveling overseas. My husband was in the military. And so when we came back and I had children, I wasn't sure that I wanted to have a baby. I thought, if I don't like this, then I can't send it back. This is it. I mean, the reality sunk in pretty well at that stage. But and so I worked for the first 5 years. And, you know, when you work, you get up every day, you fix yourself up, you get dressed, makeup, the whole thing. Well, I kept doing that after I had the baby. Not big time, you know, just enough to get up, take a shower, comb my hair, put a ponytail in, do a little eye makeup. I mean, it was, you know, for me, that was necessary because that kind of tied me from the past over into my new stage of life as a mom. So even if you can just, you know, take a shower or put your hair up or put on a clean dress or a clean shirt, something to make you feel pretty, which I think goes a long way toward our psyche in that stage when we're raising children and we just drag out of the house in the morning. And I think your husband will appreciate that too. So keep that in mind.
Just to add on to that, I know that was something that I tried to comb my hair, put on lipstick or whatever before my husband came home. So I didn't look like I had been in my pajamas all day or that I'd had a terrible day. And one thing that I remember, I would have had a bad day, and I would like, take these kids, I need a break. And that didn't go over very well. And he told me one time, he goes, it's not even enjoyable to come home to you. And that was eye-opening, because I thought, okay, this man's working hard, I'm home with the kids, yes, I'm doing my job, but I need to not throw that at him the minute he walks in the door. So I had to change my attitude on that. And yeah, even if I had had a bad day, I could tell him that. But to look presentable, give him a moment when he got home, and then share the day. So that was just something that I found helpful, and he appreciated it. So my question is, what are some of your favorite memories that you have with your kids? On that, my husband was always, he worked a lot. We were starting a business when we first had our kids. I married him, and he had a four-year-old, so I immediately was a mom, so that was adjustment. But he was fun. He would come home and play with the kids. And it got to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm doing all the work. I'm the one teaching them the manners. I'm the one making them brush their teeth or change their clothes. And I had to change my attitude. It's like, okay, I want to be the fun mom too. So we invested very early on in a lake house and a boat. I mean, it was like $100 a month. It was with our families. And my kids started going to Lake Havasu when they were really four, you know, babies. And those are memories that they cherish. You know, that was with their cousins. It was with mom and dad, with their grandparents. And now as adults, my children want to bring their kids into that tradition. So if there's any way, you know, camping was a big thing for us. He wanted motorcycles for our kids, and I wanted furniture for our living room, but so that was, but I didn't grow up with all this stuff, so for me, it was a big adjustment to think, okay, my kid's going to ride a motorcycle, or we're going to go camping, or we're going to have a boat. But I will say, as much as we argued about it, we did do it, and it's the best memories that my kids have. And it doesn't matter if it's you don't have the boat or the, you know, the place, time spent with your kids. And I think what for me I had to learn is to enjoy the moment. And again, yours are very young, so it's not like you're, you know, it's a little different. But when they get a little bit older, to play with them, to run around with them, to... my mom was very good at sitting and playing with my kids on the ground, playing the Legos, playing with the boats and the cars. I had boys and a girl, but I really took that to heart. And there were times when it's like, okay, I can play with you for a minute, or I can play just, you know, but that was enough for them. So to just take a moment and, you know, for me, I wanted a clean house, I wanted to do all these things, but the moments with them was more important than getting the house clean or everything perfect. So my attitude had to change. And I have to say, excuse me, it was hard because I wanted them to behave. I wanted them to look nice. I wanted the boys to brush their teeth every day. But I had to relax enough to let them be who they were and to enjoy it. So laugh more, be silly, you know, try to get down on their level. And maybe you don't want to play the game they want to play, but play the game they want to play. And, you know, if you do have an opportunity to go camping or just family vacations or even, you know, picnics on in the living room for dinner, silly little things that they remember. Because now I see my kids doing it with their children. So it's like, okay, something, we did something that worked okay. So laugh with them, have some fun, relax. If your house is dirty, so what? The kids are going to remember the time you spend with them, not if your house was super clean or, you know, they had everything they wanted. So that would be my suggestion.
Yep. I will add that as moms, sometimes we try to create these memory experiences. This is going to be great. They're going to remember this forever. It's just this magical thing in your brain. They don't remember those things. They remember all of this like wacky stuff that you're like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't, it's strange. They're gonna hang on to some things and they're not gonna hang on to some things, and that's okay. It makes for entertaining conversation when they get older.
I wanted to add on to the self-care. I know that there are a lot of you that do not have parents local. If people are offering to love on your children, take them up on it. I had my sister who would come and take Corey and just go and do, but I never even thought about one of my friends taking my child. Like, I felt like it was an imposition. So for you guys that are military or you just have moved here and you do not have family, take your friends up on that offer. Go and have a cup of coffee or sit at the beach or whatever by yourself to make sure that you're having time for yourself. Just do that.
I'll just add on that. When my kids were little, had a friend that created a babysitting co-op. So we had regulations, we had rules, we had a secretary that kept track of the hours so that people didn't abuse it. But it worked great, you know. I mean, we really, you, as people that had kids your own age, we basically lived in the same neighborhood. And so you could drop your kids off for a couple hours and go do something for yourself, or, you know, go on a date with your husband, or, but, anyway, you can talk to me more about that if you want to, because I think I still have that notebook somewhere.
Okay, so my question was, what was your favorite part about the toddler stage or the school age stage? Toddler, when they were asleep? No. It was so nice. Mine was very active, so he was going all the time, and I only have one, so that was another thing. I was blessed to be in a neighborhood that had a ton of kids, and so when we were at home, we could go outside. I would have time with my neighbors, and he would have time to be around other children, because as an only, you start sort of, it's my kid different because he's an only or whatever. But I loved watching him just being out and about and being himself. That was a blessing. And I have to say that school age stage, especially middle school. I worked in middle schools for 8 years, and so I have a lot of experience with different kids. But my child, and I don't know, a boy at this, it didn't matter who was around him, he would come up and give me hugs. Didn't matter through high school, hey mom, great big bear hugs. So I remember that. I remember also for you that do have boys, they do not want you looking at them when you're talking. So you need to be active while you're having conversations with these boys, because they don't want to see you making eye contact. So I don't know, it's a guy thing. You know, we want to be intentional. We want to look at each other and talk and stuff, but no. So be active with them and just ask, you know, simple questions. School age, it's rough. But you know what? Embrace your kids, know them, and want to be around them as much as possible. And they're going to push back. So, yeah. Anybody else?
I have notes, so be prepared. okay, my first question was, what every mother should know? So, every mother should know that their child is a gift from God, and that their child is unique, individual. There is not another living creature on the earth like your child. You have three or four of them, and each one of them is an individual, and they're different. And so, having said that, there is no roadmap. There's no one roadmap. There's not one book. There's not one plan or podcast or expert or a mentor mom that can tell you the perfect way to raise your child. The books aren't going to work. They'll work for three of them, and it won't work for this one. Or this expert has said this is what they should be doing now, and this one is and that one isn't. And you can't take the square peg and try to pound it into the round hole. You know your child better than anyone else. So you take in all the information, but at the end of the day, you look at your child, and you listen to your mama gut, I always say, your mama bear instincts, and you know what's the best for your child. And don't try to compare them. Don't try to, oh, well, so-and-so's doing this, or the book says that. I guarantee you that none of them start kindergarten, you know, still with Binky in their mouth and blankie. I mean, you know, my girls had their blankies till they were, well, one of them got rid of it when she was married, she said, I think. Yeah, and the other one had hers. She lost it, you know, in Toledo, Ohio, when she was in grad school. So, you know, you just really have to rely on yourself, rely on the Lord, pray. Praying is your biggest tool in raising your children. And listen to, you know, yes, take in everybody's information. But don't get wrapped up in, oh, you know, I'm supposed to be here. This is supposed to be happening now. It doesn't. It doesn't work that way. And that's not the way God meant it to be.
Marian, can what? I add to that? Just a little set. Can I add to that, to what you're saying? That's so good, not to expect the book to give you the answers. because I when raising my first one, I didn't have any help. You know, I told you, I didn't know anything about raising babies. I, you know, was just on my own. And I had, there was a well-known doctor who put books out in those days on how exactly to raise a child and what age they were supposed to do this, what age they were supposed to do that. And if they didn't do it, then I felt like, oh no, my child, he's not developing correctly. So, and the funny example of this is he was my experimental baby. I went by that book. It said in the book, by the time they're two, they should not be putting their hand in their plate of food. If they do that, stop them. So we trained our son to sit in his high chair, put his arm down like this when he ate, and eat with his other hand, you know, he had his arm down. He did that until I realized he was doing it all the time and he didn't have to do it anymore. So we have to be careful about books that tell you what to do, like Marion said, you know them.
Right. What your child needs from you is your attention and your love and your understanding. They don't care what brand of car seat they're in. They don't care what, if you have the best swaddle or the worst swaddle. They don't care about any of those things. They do care if they have to compete for your time and your attention. So when your little ones, starting toddler, and I'm telling you going through college, when they come to you and they need to talk to you, you better stop and listen. If you're busy, and I know everyone has a different situation, then you stop and say, I really want to hear what you have to say. Can you help me finish what I'm doing? Or if you'll give me a moment, but make sure you come back to that so that they can trust that you will follow through. That's what they remember. I mean, my girls, this is one little story. My girls called me a lot. They still do. I talk to my daughters 2 and 3 times a day. And yeah, so I don't know if I'm needy or they're needy, but anyway. But I had one daughter that would call me from college, but she'd always call like at 11 at night. Whenever she was done doing whatever, she'd call if she had a problem, she had this. And my husband would say, does this ever end? Tell her to call in the morning. And I'd always say, no, this is when she needs to talk. So, and especially today, with you don't raise your kids by yourself anymore. You do it, the internet does it, the teachers at school do it, the man on the street does it. So you have to make sure that your home is a safe place for your children, that when they come home, what they have to say to you, you're going to hear it. You're not going to react. I'll tell you what, when they get into junior high, some of the things they come home and tell you, if you go like this, they'll never come home and tell you anything again. You've got to hear it, take it in, and they have to know that they're safe telling you those things, because if there isn't someone at home that's going to listen to them, there are plenty of people out there today that do not have your child's welfare and, you know, at heart, that will listen. On the internet, on the street, in the classroom, that's the main thing. I mean, mothers need to know a zillion things, right? About everyday whatever. But the bottom line is you need to know your children. They need to know they're safe with you. They need to know they can come to you for anything. And they need to know that you'll give them their full attention, your full attention, and not, yes, 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 I'm on, you know, my phone, or yes, 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 I'm... It just comes down to that. The one other thing, okay, I could go on and on, you know. You guys, if any of you have been at my table, you know I'm a broken record when it comes to this. When your kids start getting into elementary school, know their friends. Know the parents of their friends. Get to know them. And sometimes that's difficult because that's not your personality to reach out, but it is important to know when your little one's going over to so-and-so's house to play, what's happening at so-and-so's house, you know? My kids grew up in a small town, Diamond Bar wasn't real big, and they couldn't get away with anything. They could not get, especially when they got into junior high and high school. Someone knew, someone, you know, You know, what were you doing not in school? You should have been in school. I saw you, you know, so-and-so saw you walking down the street. Anyway, all of that said, prayer, intentionality. I mean, your kids love you unconditionally, right? And so they want that back from you. And you're exhausted at the end of the day, and I know some of you don't have the support other ones do, but, you know, in those situations, you pray about it and reach out to support. Yeah, that's it.
Anybody else? I'll just add that I was able to work in the classroom when my kids started school, and that was a huge way of getting to know the kids, watching them. And the other thing is to, much like Marion said, but to always be your child's advocate. As I know at times it's like, well, you know, why are you beating that kid up at school? And I remember my son saying, well, he's bugging me. He's in every single class that I have with him, and he's just bugging me. And I'm like, well, you know, you're not supposed to beat him up, but, you know, the kid was going through a hard time. And to just process that with my child and say, okay, well, you know, let's think about why he's doing that. Maybe, you know, and sure enough, his parents were getting divorced and the kid was having a hard time. But to allow your child to voice that or tell you, you know, I beat somebody up, you know, I mean, I got called a few times from the principal, you know, pulling kids' hair, whatever. And it's like, okay, let's, instead of getting angry at them or blaming them, to let them tell their story. And to let them be right, or, you know, not immediately go to, why'd you do that? I can't believe you, you know, just to let them talk. And the other thing that when they're in the car, carpool was a great way to learn things about my kids. So, you know, they're talking in the back seat. They don't really realize you're sitting there. So if you get kids in the car, let them talk.
Gosh, I can't remember which ones I gave you guys.
Did anybody take the nap one?
No. Okay, I'll do the nap one. How to rebrand nap and what to do when your 2.5-year-old says daily, I don't want a nap. Would you like me just to, you know, I'll look you right in the eye? I took that because I'm thinking about, like, my daughter Melanie, right? So she's got a 1.5 and a 3.5-year-old. And what she does is, because Ellie will be like, I'm not tired. She goes, oh, but we're going to go in and you can play quietly room. She just calls it, we're going to go rest our bodies. So you don't have to sleep. Because sometimes if they get in there and they lay down, they do fall asleep. And they do, gosh, sorry ladies, they do outgrow naps. But when you get older, you like them again. I don't know. It feels criminal. But I think if you don't put so much emphasis on you have to sleep, it makes it a little easier, and you just have to reword how you're saying, because their body needs to rest, even if they don't need sleep, right? So we're going to go in your room, and we're going to have some quiet time, and you can read a book, or you can do something that's quiet and restful in your room for however long it is that you want them to do it. Because nap, I mean, especially when they get to be 2.5 and they know it's a trigger word that, you know, they're going to miss out on something, really, was what it probably boils down to. But they do need their rest. So if you can just say, I'd try it. And you'd have to, again, you can't try something once and say, I tried the word rest and she just didn't do it. You know, you have to, when they're little, and some kids it takes even longer because of just developmental stuff, but it takes like 15 times, right? 15, 20 times to be exposed to either a new food or to a phrase or something where it feels more normal. So you have to kind of like write it out a little bit and be like, okay, we're going to do something different today. We're going to rest. Doesn't that sound great? I'm going to go rest too in my room while you're resting. I mean, I would try it because it's hard when you need rest and you know they need rest. But you can't force them to sleep necessarily, right? I mean, they're already at the age where this isn't necessarily going to work. So even if you just gave them quiet time to, like, rest their body, you know, don't leave anything in there that's loud and bangy when you're doing it. You know, I'd suggest, like, oh, look at some books. Or, you know, give them something quiet to do and maybe start small. Okay, we're just going to start, you know, we're going to do a 10-minute rest right now, and then kind of each day kind of build it up. You don't even have to tell them you're doing that, but you can, you know, start small so it's like, oh, this isn't so bad. Do you know what I mean? If you go, you're going to go rest in your room for 2 hours because that's how long I used to sleep and I need it, probably not going to work, right? So you're going to have to just retrain them that this is quiet and it's okay to let your body rest. Does anybody have any questions about napping? Does anybody do anything that works?
I'm going to add a little bit. Yeah. Something that I tried and didn't do all the time, but like make a fort or, you know, try and make it fun. Make a tent or put something up to make it different than both the nap or a different pillow or a fun blanket or, you know, but the fort thing was always fun to make a fort and then rest in the fort.
And I just wanted to add that 2 is probably the hardest age to deal with this because they're trying to exert their independence and they know you want them to take a nap. And so they decided, there's like, I'm going to exert my independence and I don't want to take a nap because mommy wants me to take a nap right now. So I think just knowing that is going to pass and knowing that some kids give up their naps earlier. My daughter stopped napping by the time she was 3. And so that might be your story. It might be what you're going to have to live with. But you can find alternative things to fill that gap and make sure they rest. Yeah.
I would add that I had a child that would not stay in the room and rest or whatever. They would still come out. But they just knew when they came out, they were not going to be entertained by me. Like, I was still doing my thing, and it became, well, like, I don't want to go hang out with her. She's boring. Like, she's not doing anything I want her to do, you know. So, you know, sometimes they would go back in and just play longer, you know, do whatever. But it was like, you're not going to come out here and get out your toys and do that. Like, I'm reading or I'm preparing dinner or whatever. And so, I mean, this sounds bad, but I kind of ignored them. And then it kind of, they had to self-soothe and go figure out something to do. So, okay, my question is, what stage did you find most challenging in motherhood and why? Right now. I hate to tell you this. Every stage has its challenges. Isn't that cute? It's just, but I will tell you. So, yes, I'm in a challenging phase. But I will tell you, nobody told me about double digits. Like, every time my kid turned 10, it was like, what happened? And nobody ever warned me about 10. I didn't even know 10 was a thing. So, I mean, you guys got a while before 10, so just prepare. But I just think there's kind of this thing of, oh, you know, I'm in the baby phase, and once I get rid of the bottles, and once I get rid of all the gear, and once I get rid of this, and once, you're going to want those bottles. I'm just going to say, whatever stage you're in, just treasure that stage because that's the only day that God has given you. And it is, all of it is challenging. All of it is challenging in different ways. And I just think once they have their opinions and they can start talking back and wanting to know why and why, everything, it's hard. So I would say also one thing to kind of add on to the self-care is I always felt like, oh, I'm not in this stage. Like, everybody wants to have their quiet time in the morning with Jesus. And I'm like, yeah, I want that, but I can't have that. Like, that's not going to work out. And that's just not realistic. What you have to do now is as you're going, as you're living your life, as you're doing the dishes, as you're with your child, every single moment is your prayer to God. Like, you just have to be talking to him all day long. It's not optional. You're not going to get the sit-down coffee time most of the time. But if you have that constant conversation with him throughout the day, it's very life-giving, and it really puts things in perspective when you're struggling. So that's what I think was the most, well, I didn't really answer. Everything's hard. Everything's hard, pray. No. But I've rebranded because, you know, we always do this thing, if this happens or when this happens and all that. I have now rebranded it. God is growing me. I am growing. He's leveling me up. This is the next thing. And it's like, bring it on, you know? So you just got to get your mindset right.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It's all about me, right? Kid's okay. I'm having trouble. And, you know, part of that's true. You have to bend. You have to grow. You have to stretch. And it's not comfortable being a mom sometimes. My question is kind of a tough one, and I'm open to additional input. What are some ways to manage anger with my boys? And I don't know if that's boys or the focus there or if it's all children, but anger is hard because anger is a really strong emotion. Maybe you were raised that way. A lot of they say that carries over into how we raise our children. They use anger to kind of control the situation. The kids get used to that, and then they don't want to listen to you anymore if you're angry. Oh, mom's just having her thing. You know, it doesn't mean anything. So finding ways to avoid anger is a big challenge. You might want to, of course, takes a lot of prayer. God knows you're dealing with it. He knows how to help you. He knows who to put in your life to help you. And I recommend maybe accountability partner or partners, you know, that you can let it all out. You know, the frustration that comes is really hard to control. That child is not doing what you want them to do. And the first thing that you think of is, I need to control that situation. He's not acting like he's supposed to, and I'm going to. And then the next, you're spiraling off into anger. And that's where we need to stop. And when we feel that urge of anger coming on us, you know the old adage, they say count to 10. Count to 10 before you say anything in your mind. Stop. If you can, if you're an emotional person, it's really hard to control that anger. I used to get angry at my children. I don't remember that it was a common thing, but I do know what it feels like. And it's something that you have to overcome. And there's lots of solutions for anger. I mean, you know, you can read books about controlling anger. Maybe you want to read some of those. I don't know. Scripture has a lot of resource on that. Be angry and sin not. You can have anger, but it's what you do with it that causes the sin. So you want to keep that in mind. I want to channel this anger in another way. So there's probably a million solutions to that. I just want to say, don't feel guilty about it. Don't beat yourself up about it. It's something that you're dealing with. As Lacey said, we're all growing, and it's something you have to learn to deal with. But don't let it go on if you're having trouble with it. Get a good friend, a pastor, a counselor, or someone who can you can air some of this stuff. Talk to your husband about it. You know, I'm really having anger problems with this child, and see what he says. He might have some really good input. Usually we don't think about asking him, right? What do you think about this? And see what he says. You know, he might not be a big deal to him, but if it is to you, and it should be, because it can be a pattern, and it really speaks to control. I can use my anger to control you because you don't like me to be angry. And so if you don't want me to be angry, then do what I do, what I tell you to do. So you might want to talk to your child about anger and say, you know, mommy got angry and I really didn't mean to. I'm sorry. And that will kind of, you know, soften the situation a little bit with them. And the more you can do that, be vulnerable. Oh, mom is feeling like she's really going to be angry. Be open. Be honest. What you're doing is making me really angry and I don't want to be angry. And I just want you to learn how to do what you're not supposed to do or to do. So open to any other thoughts and suggestions on that one.
I know when my kids were really young, I used to give myself a timeout. So I can remember driving and then, I don't know what those girls, they were bickering about something, I don't know, in the back seat, and I just like was losing it, you know, internally. And then before I would lose it externally, I literally just pulled over to the side of the road and was like, I just need to get outside for a minute and give myself a minute to breathe. And just be out of, like, separate myself from the situation so that I didn't escalate it. And I think anger's hard, you know? And it's also, you have to, I think there's something valuable in evaluating and being mindful about what triggers you, right? So what triggers me to be angry? Why? Because that's a symptom of something else deeper, right? And so what is triggering me to be angry? And kind of being noticing that a little bit more when something's happening about, okay, what is it about, like, I'm angry, why? You know, because is it because they're not listening? Is it because I'm not getting my way? Is it because I had an expectation? I think expectations are really dangerous because it sets us up to fail and it sets your kids up to fail, especially when they're unspoken, right? So I have an expectation of how you're gonna get up. Oh, I'm gonna pick on Melanie a little bit. Man, Melanie was the slowest moving creature on the planet. I love her, but man, it took her like 20 minutes to get a pair of shoes on. And it was just so hard because I wanted to be on time. Her sister didn't want to be late to school. And yet we're sitting there, you know, because 20 minutes, you can't, like, unless I'm going to physically do it. And I think there were just times where I was like, okay, I'm ticked because I don't want to be late. And for that, for me, I think I had to look back and be like, well, why don't I want to be late? I don't want to be late because I don't want people judging me that I'm late or that I'm, you know, that I'm not good enough at something or whatever. And so I think it's really important when you're angry to give yourself space, especially, you know, there's different levels of anger, right? There's frustration, anger. I would hope nobody would go to the point of violence. Before you would ever let yourself escalate to something like that, you need a partner. You need somebody to come alongside you. If you're struggling with anger, you need, I mean, here we all are. We're here. Or a friend at the table or somebody. If you're having really serious struggles with issues with anger, you probably just need somebody to help come alongside you so that you can kind of work through it, right? Because it's a natural response that we have that we don't even really think about, right? It takes intentionality to not be angry because anger can just come like this without thinking. And so we have to pause to think and then step into it. It's something really cool I was going to say and I already forgot. So if I remember, I'll say it later. But it's just important to have support. You know, we just need support and we just need to be careful about that we're not angry because of an expectation that we have that's not realistic, right? So for me, if I'm thinking that I'm gonna give Melanie 3 minutes to get out the door, I set myself up for failure, right? So that's why it's important to kind of step back and be like, okay, what is the bigger picture here in my anger? Because I, you know, she's much faster now, you guys. She's 28, she actually puts her shoes on really quick. It's great.
I just want to add, my table has heard this, but talking about expectations, not only of our children, but of our husbands. And my husband is a big advocate, and we've done a lot of marriage mentoring, and one of the things about expectations is you have to voice them. So whether it's with your kids or with your husband, you need to be able to say what your expectations are. And number two, they need to be realistic. And especially with our kids, you know, if they can put their shoes on, that's great. But if they can't, you got to help them or teach them. And then the third is that you have to agree upon it. And I say this more so with the husbands, but if you're able to talk to them about those things, tell them your expectations. I know my daughter recently got married, and she loves flowers, and she just expected that her husband would bring her flowers. And it wasn't until she said to him, you know, that's kind of important to me, and my dad did that, you know, whatever, that he understood that was important. And so now he brings her flowers. So I just think with our kids as well as our husbands, to be able to say what your expectations are and that they are reasonable and that they understand and agree that, yeah, that is a reasonable expectation. So just a little nugget there that I know I thought was a good one that my husband always tells our mentor couples.
Okay, my last question is, what is a favorite family tradition you have or can share? I think family traditions probably, you know, they're unique to your own family depending on what your family dynamic is. But some that, okay, so when I was growing up, there were four of us, but I always shared a room with my sister that was 2 years younger than I was. And my father, and this happened until the day I left for college, he came in every night and said prayers with us every night. And so that's what I did with my kids, and that's what they do with their kids. And but some of our traditions were wrapped around the holidays, and like 4th of July, every 4th of July, our family came to San Clemente, there was a whole, I'm from a big Italian family, and there was a whole group, including Laura Zanotti's husband, who I've known him since before he was born. But the whole, we'd come down, we'd be on the beach, we'd come up and watch the parade that they'd do in the bowl and fireworks. We did it every year growing up, every year. And we looked forward to it. Another tradition that we did with our kids was in the fall, I don't know, do you guys know Oak Glen? Yeah, we'd take our kids every fall to Oak Glen, pick apples, buy apple pie. On Halloween, in our neighborhood, the kids would all trick-or-treat, they'd come back, we'd have pizza, the kids would all trick-or-treat, but every year they'd come back, and in our garage, we'd roll out a big carpet. The kids sat around the carpet and they did the Great American Candy Exchange. And it was so elaborate that my husband wrote a paper on micromanagement and told about it. But that was something that we did every year. In your own home, you can do things like family, you pray together as a family, and everyone, even the littlest, can say a sentence, has something to say in the prayer, right? Another thing that I never did and I wish I'd known about it was, have you guys heard of the talking stick? Yeah, where you get together as a family, I don't know if it's once a week or whatever, and you sit as a family and whoever is holding the talking stick gets to speak. And you can't interrupt them and you can't, you know, make fun or poo-poo it away or... as long as it's not derogatory against anybody, you know. But if there's something they have to say, that then they get the chance to say it in the family. I think that's awesome. That's something I learned later in life. But you guys can make up your own things. My granddaughters, when they go to bed, my daughter plays Lauren Daigle for them. And I didn't know that the first time I babysat them and they could talk. When I went in to put them to bed, they said, well, Mimo, aren't you going to do Daigle? I was like, what? Is that a dance? What am I doing? What is Daigle? But then, okay, they always play Lauren Daigle. Anyway, you all know things. It's just important to have something that's consistent that they'll look back on. There's eight grandchildren. Well, my daughters, there's eight cousins, and they're all in their 40s now. We take pictures. We started when there was just two of them. Christmas Eve on the couch. Now they're huge, right? They're in their 40s. We still take pictures of them on the couch. And they expect it. Well, you know, hey, aren't we going to take the pictures? So it's anything. It's unique to your family. But those are the things your kids are going to remember, are those kind of traditions. They don't have to be elaborate. They don't have to be, you know. You make cookies once a month with your kids, whatever it is. Anybody else?
We had a tradition with my grandma of every Thursday was frozen yogurt day after school. So that, like she said, it could be just something very simple, but it's kind of like something that's, I feel like things that are on the calendar of like every Monday, this is what we did, or... you know, every Monday is breakfast for dinner, or just like silly things. It doesn't have to be, you know, big. But a lot of it, I think, does go around holidays. In our family, the grandmas always bought an ornament for every kid. So we've got way too many ornaments, but like just passing things like that down. And I think you're building traditions and you just don't know it because your kids will say something like, oh, well, what about this? And you're like, oh, I forgot. I didn't know that mattered to you. Okay, yeah, we're doing that. You know, so you are doing things that they're picking up on, but just trying to be intentional.
And I think the sillier the better, especially when your kids are little. You know, silly songs or dancing around crazy. I wasn't always real outgoing, but my kids would laugh at silly things and... now with my grandkids, I always sing Jesus Loves Me to them. And so now it's like whenever I'm with them and I get to put them to bed, they're like, okay, you know, and now some of them sing it with me. And it's just, you know, the simple little Jesus Loves Me song. And so just, it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be elaborate. But consistent, you know, something that you do with them every time you see them. Or, and again, I think just dancing around, laughing with them goes a long way. And especially when they're little toddlers, you know, they just want your time and your energy. Really, they enjoy that. So laugh with them and play with them.
We had a Christmas tradition with our family. Fortunately, I'm blessed to have them together. Probably for the last 25 years. My daughter's been married almost that long. Anyway, everybody comes to our house, all the kids, all the grandkids. And we've done that. We have the same dinner every year, turkey and stuffing, and you know all the trimmings. And I didn't realize the importance of that until our oldest grandchild went to college. And you know how it gets kind of scattered in those years, and they've got things going on and stuff. And there was a debate on where the family was going to do Christmas. And she said, I want to go to Grammy's house, because that's what she always did. And I thought, wow, I never realized the importance of consistency like that. So what everybody has said about consistency, building things, it's the heritage that you're passing on. And that's important for children, to have that heritage behind them that brings things into their lives and makes it matter. Even when changes are going on in their lives, your lives, they still have those memories. And it's stuck with her. And that's where she wanted to be. So that's where we were. And what do you want to have? Turkey and stuffing and all the trimming. So, you know, it's worth it. It's worth the effort.
We do a lot of baking as kids. That's what we do, you know. With my family, we did baking, and so I did a lot of baking with my kids. And even with, I think I've been better about it, even with the grandkids. As soon as they could sit up in a high chair, they are helping me mix and stir, and we're making cookies or brownies, and it's just something that we do at the house all the time. So to the point where even the boys are 6 and 8 now, and I can say, oh, do you guys want to go do something special today? And I'm thinking, like, Legoland, the zoo, Disneyland. And Finney will say, I just want to go to your house and bake some cookies, right? So I have this like big giant thing of what I dream is in my head. And he's like, I just want to hang out with you and bake cookies and play games. So we play a lot of games. And we started when they were very little. I think Mariah was 2. And we started playing like games with her. Trouble was the greatest. It's great, but it's also like she'd wake up in the morning practicing to get 6s when she was 2. So we'd wake up to the sound of, but Mariah can still pop a 6 like nobody's business. I'm just telling you, lots of years of mastery. But we spend a lot of our family time together playing games. And the thing that I think my kids have appreciated, and I've seen them do that as they've grown, is for birthdays, we all go around the table and we say something that we love about the other, like whoever's birthday it is, everybody kind of goes around and we do that. And we, you know, obviously at Thanksgiving, we go around and do that. Funny story. You guys want to hear a funny story about that? I think it's funny. I don't know. You might be appalled. So we were going around. It was quite a few years ago because my father-in-law and my mother-in-law and my mom were all alive. And we're going around and we were doing it. And so sometimes Christina loves to make rules. And she's like, you can't repeat anything anybody said. And so Kevin was being a smart aleck because he knows how much Christina loves corn. So he goes, I love corn. And kind of like gives her a little smirk. And my mom, who's apparently her hearing's not very good, yells out and goes, you like porn? And we're like, my in-laws are like dying. I think that they like had a heart attack in that moment. But it's something that we like, it was 15 years ago and we still like laugh about it because it was just a funny thing. So it's just nice to, and then it's, you're, with that, you're like acknowledging somebody and what you love about them and what makes them special to you. And we do that a lot, sometimes even not at birthdays, just for fun.
One other thing too is this family dinners. I know your kids are very young, but that was something we really did. And even when our kids were older and he did sports or whatever, we still really tried to have dinner together several nights a week. And there's just something magical about the time at the dinner table with everybody sitting there that builds community. So you can start now and just pull up the high chair, or, you know, even if it's for 5-10 minutes, get them used to sitting at a table with you.
Do you guys have more questions? Okay, I still got one. What advice would you give your freshly postpartum self? They gave this one to me because that was the closest to I think it's grace, and I think it's we always have this pressure to kind of get back to whatever, and I don't think that that's healthy. I think you are giving these few precious months, years, however long you get to be with your kid, and you need to soak it in because it's so special. And don't worry if you haven't lost weight or if you feel like garbage. Like, it's okay. Just love on that child. And all those things will come back around. You'll get your routine. You'll get whatever. But you don't ever get that yummy smelling baby back in your arms the same way. And it's so precious. So that's what I would just say. There's a lot of physical things they don't talk to you about that happen to your body when you're after a baby. And I think you should talk to your friends about those things that might be happening, or your doctor or whatever. But it's all just temporary, and it's going to be okay. And it's just part of the process. And like I said, it just goes so fast.
Just a quick add-on. It's been a while, but I still remember. That's when self-care really kicks in. You need some self-care. You need to be able to take bubble baths, light candles, relax. I know you can't because you have a baby, but do as much of that as you can. And don't isolate. That's probably the biggest issue. We want to isolate. I had a girl in our group last year, a table last year. We couldn't get, she said, well, I'm going to come if I can make it. You know, I'm just feeling really, she just had her baby. So we prayed so much for her. She finally came. She came twice, but she couldn't keep it up. She just needed to be isolated. And that's not, it's not really healthy. We tried our best. Hopefully she had other things. She was a military wife. So, you know, they've got a whole other dynamic going on in their lives. But it's important to have people, it's important to do what you guys are doing here. You come together and talk about your issues and your what you're going through. And that's a biggie as far as getting through it, right?
Add another thing. I think it, like she said, it's great that you have all your mom friends and everybody's in the same stage of life and you commiserate about those things, which is important, but you need to have multi-generational friends and people that can go to the park with you that don't have four kids next to them, like that aren't dealing with their own stuff. You guys all have your own stuff. You need to have people. I'll volunteer. I'll go to park day or whatever, but just like you need to just have people that want to help you, like, because they're there and it's okay. Like, you're not expected to do it all on your own. So
I have one more question. I think I have one more question. What have been the most helpful ways to stay connected with mom friends and build meaningful and lasting friendships? See, it was like a great segue. it's time and intentionality. If it's important, you make the time to do it. It just takes time and intentionality. My husband teases me because he's like, you fish with a net, so I grab you in and I keep you forever unless you walk away, and he catches and releases. So while you're in our life, if you're here, he loves on you, but when you leave, he sends you Bible verses. He's like, that's all I can do. So it's just about being consistent and making time. I know that my birthday was last week, and my best friend from high school, who I don't really see that much, just a lot of different life circumstances, is kind of going through a crisis right now, and I haven't seen her in probably 2 years, and she just called me and said, hey, are you doing anything? And I'm like, nope, and she came over for 3 hours and just needed support and love, you know? And so that's because built-in time and intentionality, and so it sounds so simple, but it's just, you just have to make the time to do it. For me, if I don't write things down, they don't happen, you know? So, and I'm a little crazy. I have a very, 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 very long text feed because every once in a while I'll go through it and I'll be like, oh,
I haven't talked to Rachel in a long time. I'm just going to text her and see how she's doing. So for me, that's kind of how I monitor it. I keep certain texts on my feed all the time. So those are the people that I know. If I haven't heard from them, I just want to check in or, you know, invite them to lunch or spend time with them. So you just have to pick your moments in this season when you're dealing with naps and babies and whatever. But you pick your moments and you have to make the time. Because you can't have deep, lasting connections with people if you don't give them your time.
I think everybody needs a TMI friend that you can just say the thing. And I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know I was the TMI friend for a long time. When I had kids your guys' age, I worked, I was in, like, night nurse. And night nurses share it all. And when I quit working there, I was like, oh, like, that was not normal, the things we were sharing with one another. But you just need to have that person that's not going to judge you and just, like, you can just say whatever it is. And not to commiserate, not to just complain about things, but just be real and honest. So find a TMI friend. And then the other thing, too, is I used to be very jealous of people who still had all their friends from high school and they're all connected and, you know, just these lifelong friends. And that's not how God did my life. God has done my life in chapters of people. These people were my people from then and they were fabulous. And now I have a different chapter and that's okay. So I know with a lot of you guys in military and moving around and everything, you don't get to really grow your roots deep, but just appreciate who is here now and who is in your life right now.
That was really good advice because I was raised in... I was raised in the military, and you develop a different lifestyle when you live in the military. You're used to moving, you're used to dropping everything and going to a new location every maybe year, and it was every year for me. So I know the goods and the bads about that. The good is I got a great education growing up. You know, we lived all over the place. The bad was I had a hard time developing relationships because I wasn't going to see him again after the year. You know, we moved away. If I kept all my friends that I ever knew, I'd have hundreds in my list. And so there's challenges on both sides. But I'm saying, you know, just keep those people in your life that are close to you. I think our pastor said five people. Have five people in your circle that are, like, around you like this that you can trust. Trust is big, that you can confide in, and that you can keep you accountable. In other words, when you start to go off on something, they'll give you a look, you know, like, and you know. It's really great to have that, somebody who cares that much about you, who will let you know, this is what you're doing, this is what you're weak in, so watch it, and that might help you with anger, too.
Yeah, and on that note, too, I would say people that are going to give you wise counsel. You know, sometimes we'll call the first person that's going to agree with us, or if we've had an argument with someone, we want to be validated for it. But just remember, be careful of who you're getting your counsel from, and make sure it's someone that's safe, that isn't going to turn around and tell somebody else, or that's going to, you know, give you advice because that's what you want to hear. I know I would fall into that, or just people gossiping, and it's easy to get into that, but just be careful who you're trusting as your confidence. And I think here, you know, my own experience was just, I still am friends with the girls that I did MOPS with 25 years ago. And, you know, we see each other maybe once a month now, but over the years we raised our kids together, and then we kind of, in high school, the kids went different ways, but there's that bond. And if you share things with people, you keep those connections. But as Laura said, you have to be intentional, and you have to put the time in to make those kind of relationships.
I'm going to just tag on to what Connie was saying. I appreciate that you moms that are military moms, it's a whole different, it's a whole different lifestyle, and you have a whole different roadmap that you guys have to follow. But the things that are constant that you can take with you are your faith, your prayers, and you're like, okay, your traditions are going to be smaller. They're going to be things that you can take with you wherever you go. There are going to be things that you can do whether your husband is deployed or whether he's at home. And that's going to look different than, I mean, I was raised, I lived in the same town all growing up. My kids lived in the same. So my traditions were easy because they were built in. I had always had the same friends. My kids, you guys have a different, it's a tougher road. And I want to say that I recognize, when we're doing all of this talking, we're recognizing that you guys may have it a little more complicated and a little harder, but you can still create those situations for you and your family.
I guess I'll share about friends too. Like Sharon, I and Mops still am very close to at least two that were in my group. Like, Corey's 27 now, so for 25 years we have done life together. And it's been an ebb and flow. There were years where we didn't really connect. And then I've got a group of women, and they're my people, that they will go ahead and they will tell me, get back in line, you know. We meet almost every single Friday morning, and that is intentional. We have coffee, we do books, and we do life together. And we're in basically the same stage, but so many different avenues also that, you know what, if you can get just one person who is your person, keep that one person. Yeah. And military moms, yeah, you've got them. You've got them right at your table. You just need to be able to, like they were saying, cultivate that relationship. It takes a lot of time. And we don't necessarily put in the time. So, yeah, make sure you've got that person or those people.
It's 11:15. I just wanted to pause for a second and see if any of you have any questions that we either didn't answer adequately enough or you want more depth or something that came up while you were sitting here and listening and you just want to know anything. We're here. No questions off limits.
I do have a thing on a mother-in-law. My husband is full Japanese, and his parents spoke Japanese. And it was very difficult for me to be around his family, around his parents, because they'd start in English, go into Japanese. I mean, his mom is still there, and then go into English, and I'm like, okay, I've gotten this, and I've gotten... So for me to try and get in close to my mother-in-law took a lot of intentionality. She didn't like me because I was white, and my husband was the firstborn male in the family. So I had to make those inroads with my in-laws. My husband did not have a great relationship with his family. And so I was intentional to go and do things with his family. Christmas, my husband didn't go to a lot of family functions. I went. And because family's important to me. And so I would tell his family, they'd say, "Where is Kelly?" And finally, I got so tired of it, and I looked at him, and I said, "Listen, he's an adult. Call him and ask him where he's at." I said, "I am here. I want to be with you." And I think that for his mom was huge.
that I was making those steps to be included into a culture I knew nothing about. So again, it's the intentionality of you reaching out. And it's hard. I didn't want to go all the way up to Montebello with Corey by myself, but I did it because I wanted them to know that I loved them. And we were Jesus to them. So, yeah, it hopefully spoke volumes to them.
Okay, there's one final question, and I think we should all chime in on this one. It's, if you could go back and do something different, what would it be and why? Practically, I wish I would have done the photo books every year, just printed out the dang books and had all the years, like, printed and not on drives and in the computer. Practically, that's what I would do different. Spiritually, I should have listened to God sooner and stayed home with my kids sooner than I did. I didn't want to give up a role. I didn't know who I would be without that role. I didn't know how we would provide, all those things, which were all very valid because for a while I was like the main breadwinner. So, but he was nudging me a long time and I wasn't listening. So if any of you are feeling that nudge, listen.
Was it?
What would you do different?
What would I do different? Oh, I think, so I don't want to get into too deep in this, but my husband was a little rough when our two younger kids were born and small. He was very intense. And I think I did the best that I could with what I knew, but I wish I would have, I'm going to cry. I wish I would have stood in the gap more for my kids when he was out of control. It was easier just to like run and hide and self-protect. And I think it would have been better for me to stand in the gap and have hard conversations with him that I was too scared to have.
We're good now. They're good.
So. Oh, I was searching for something. And when you said something about your raising your kids, I thought, I wish I had valued my husband much more than I did. I kind of took him for granted. He's a really great guy. He's always been very loving to me. He listens, he's kind of been my sounding board, and I'm really thankful for that, but I didn't always respect him the way I should have. And I regret that, and I still work on that, because I think that's, we have expectations, and if somebody doesn't stand up to our expectations, we don't respect them as much. And so I had to work on really, really managing my expectations and let him be who he is. He's not like me. We're totally opposites in most ways. And so I had to give him space. I still have to give him space to be who he is. He's getting a little hard of hearing. It's so frustrating. I'm the only one he can't hear. Because of the range of my voice. And I thought, I get really frustrated with that. I thought, no, I want to respect him. You know, you can't hear me, but that's okay. You be you, and I'll be me. And this is after a lot of years of marriage. So if you can get a handle on this one early in your marriage, you will be so, your marriage will be better than ever. If we can respect our husbands the way God wants us to, they will grow to be the men that you want them to be. That's the secret. Respect them. Even when they're not doing what you think you like or want them to do, he's still my husband. And I need to respect him for that and the fact that he's put up with me all these years. So respect is the key.
That was very good. I think for me to be less, I would have been less critical of my kids. I think even with a daughter especially, just how she looked, I wanted my kids to look perfect or have matching clothes. So my own mother pointed out to me one time that I was too critical. So I did change it, but early on I wish I would have been less critical and just let them be them more. So
um, I had a laugh when Laura was sharing because our husbands are so similar, and we, in many aspects, are so similar that I wish I would have spoken up when my husband was intense. It was not easy. But 30 years later, we're doing okay, you know? Speak up. But if you can do it, not in front of your children, because you want to have a united front. And I didn't feel like I could. Again, the fear part of it, that I could speak up. So, yeah, that is one thing that I would change.
I'm trying to think what my girls would say if they were here right now, of what they think I should have done differently. Probably, I'm a type A personality, and I like to plan, and I like to have things done ahead of time. And my girls aren't necessarily like that. And now they can say to me, "Mom, stop," you know. But there were many times they wanted to say that to me growing up and didn't. And I realize now that my way is not necessarily, it's the right way for me, but it's not necessarily the right way for, you know, the way my daughters do it. My younger daughter likes to put everything off till the 11th hour. And I was like, always, "You haven't started your project. You haven't done that. You have a project due. You have da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da." And it always got done. And you know what? She's married. I mean, she's a great mom. And somehow it worked. And she didn't always do it my way. So I should have realized sooner that my way isn't always necessarily, it was right for me, but not necessarily right for them.